This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's bring TNS in here and let's sit down and answer some of these questions we all have about technical things in our lives. You know, we talk about broadband, we talk about the devices that we use every day, we talk about Wi-Fi, we talk about all the stuff we need, right, Ben?
Exactly, Gareth. These all good things.
Why are these important to us? Because they are more important than the people we spend our time with. The devices that they are.
True.
They're way more important. So, Tennis is in his 9-to-5. He's the head of commercial analytics at Wonga, which is great because they're a financial technology company. We know about them. He also has honors degrees in statistics and financial mathematics. So, what do you think, first of all, Tennis, about this idea of people dropping maths as a compulsory subject at school? I mean, do you think that this is going to make us smarter as a nation?
Well, of course not. It's very worrying where the basic education is going in the country. And, you know, in our industry, we've got such a shortage of this critical skills. And to think that we're going to be suffering more and more as time goes on is quite scary.
You are with Bandwidth Blog, right?
Correct.
Tell me about the Bandwidth Blog.
So Bandwidth Blog is a technology website. We talk about all things tech. We like to focus on consumer stuff, so things that affect all of us.
All right.
Things that we like, things that we talk about day to day. So, you know, all the gadgets and all the other stuff as well.
We've spoken to you before whenever they launch a new phone or something interesting
Correct.
Comes into the market. Is there anything exciting going on at the moment that we don't know about?
Well, it's difficult these days to be exciting in the technology market, right?
This is what I wanted to ask you about, because there's so much, they're new products, but they're not doing anything new.
It's very difficult for people to stand out, and I mean, that's why we saw last year for the first time iPhone sales starting to wane, and the Android market is also, you know, it's becoming kind of bland in many ways, and that's why companies like
so bland.
Samsung and LG have had to do something different this year.
Well, we celebrated 10 years of the iPhone the other day.
Yeah,
and everybody was saying, well, I can't believe it's been 10 years. What's new there?
The iPhone is almost exactly the same as it was 10 years ago.
If someone picked up a 10-year-old iPhone and they picked up the brand new iPhone 7, they wouldn't really notice that much difference. The apps look the same. The functionality is more or less the same. It still can't smell or feel or taste.
Correct. Definitely.
It can't do anything. No innovation.
What can it do?
It can basically do all of the things that we want it to do. They've plopped a bigger screen on it. Yeah. It looks nicer.
Well, first of all, they went smaller and smaller, and then they went bigger and bigger. Now we don't know what they... Now the camera size has got up. That's all. They've got it, 12 megapixels or something.
Yeah, so that is actually one of the areas where people are trying to differentiate themselves these days is with the camera, because there's not much else left.
Well, yesterday we were talking to Rich Mulholland, and he was saying that... No, the only thing we actually really care about is longer batteries. So we don't need thinner phones. We don't need better cameras, because it's not like we're going to start working for magazines, because magazines don't really have a need for that anymore. None of us are ever going to submit 20 megapixel photographs, right? Instagram is even cutting down its quality.
Yeah.
So why are we not getting better batteries?
That is actually one of my pain points as well.
Yeah.
Make the phones a little bit thicker and double the size of the
battery. Exactly. Now, I know like guys like Gareth and Sia wear very skinny pants, and I can understand big phones are not going to be the way forward for them.
Because we have terrific legs.
But how much bigger is a phone going to get?
Argue with that, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, just on that point for 2 seconds, Ben.
Yeah. And you know what, Ben? We do like our thin phones.
Yeah, okay. But would you rather want an extra day of battery or not have to worry about battery? Okay,
sure.
So it's the payoff.
But and for the extra day of battery, you don't need it to be a brick. It just needs to be a little bit thicker.
Yeah.
So is it because the technology can't be sized down any more than it currently is? Or is it because batteries are inefficient?
Well, it's a bit of both, actually. So, you know, Moore's Law is basically coming to an end now, where they said that every 2 years...
When you say coming to an end, their predictions are that it isn't exactly doubling every year.
Yes, so it's slowing down.
Moore's Law is the ability for something to... technology to... what's the word I'm looking for? Processing to be able to double in its efficacy every year. This was a law that was postulated by Ray Kurzweil many years ago. He said, every year we manage to double our ability to process and we halve the price, effectively, of that processing, or at least the space that it takes up.
Yeah.
That's true for circuits and may still be true for circuits. They say it's slowed down. Well, it's not quite double.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean it's dead.
No, no, it's not dead. And it won't ever be dead until we get to the one atom thick circuits, which is where we're heading to.
So ultimately, there has to be a terminus to this. It's not going to carry on forever. But with batteries, there's never been a Moore's Law.
No, never. And the lithium ion batteries we have these days are very, very inefficient. And we know this. And it seems like companies are doing all of this R&D into cameras and screens, but why not into batteries?
And meanwhile, batteries have caused them more headaches than anything else. Samsung with that
Note 7
situation where you can't take these things on a plane anymore, anywhere in the world. Everybody looks askance. Then people are so worried they're going to blow up in their handbags. They should have been paying more attention to batteries.
Yeah, definitely. They were exactly doing what we were just saying and trying to make the device too thin, meaning that there was enough space for the volume battery that they actually needed for the device. And what's scary is they're actually rushing the new Note 8 as well.
Uh-oh. So, don't buy it, people. What is the biggest user of battery power in our phones? Screen?
It'll be screen, yes. So if you have a lot of screen on time, most smartphone batteries these days have about 4, if you're lucky, to 6 hours screen on time before the battery's dead.
What do you think of this one that Sia paid a premium for, this red phone of his?
It looks great.
There we go. That's all we care about.
Okay, well,
and it's
superficial
dope is, selfies.
There's a reason superficial and Sia both start with an S. Amanda, can you bring me some water? Thank you.
But in actual technicalities, really, like when we get back to, and this is what marvels me as well. Like, why?
Marvels, what is it?
Why we even buy into the hype of everything?
Like, because we want the newest thing. We're worried we're going to miss out. So you hear that they're launching a new phone.
Just the fact that it's new and that we won't have it.
I agree with Sia to a degree. Why are we so stupid? Why do we fall for this crap? Is there possibly something on the horizon that's going to be a breakthrough? That, like the iPhone at its time, it could play music when it came out. That was a big deal to people.
Yeah.
Had a camera on it. It was a big deal to people. It was able to bring a little bit of the PC or the laptop into a mobile dimension. But remember, at that time, none of that was regular.
Mm.
What's going to be next?
So just to answer your previous questions here, one of the big reasons we've got all this extra power being packed into the devices year after year is because a lot of people are trying to are beginning to experiment with apps a lot more. So apps need a lot more processing power to actually do what developers want them to do. So that's where a lot of the effort is going in terms of using that power in a device.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what is coming, there's not a lot on the horizon that is going to be groundbreaking.
So depressing.
Samsung have in their new device this year, they've got what they call an infinity display, so it folds over the sides of the device.
Oh.
And it looks nice.
Hmm.
It's not very functional, at least to me. But they are also developing, and LG are also developing, the foldable displays, which could be an interesting concept if they can actually make it work.
So Samsung really did go like balls to the wall with their campaign. How is this innovative, or like to the layman's person?
But what is this unbox bullshit?
What's
that all about?
There?
The selling point is just the aesthetics, to be honest. It just looks a lot different than the previous devices because it's basically all screen at the front.
And it's a wraparound screen.
Yeah, so there isn't a button at the front, like on an iPhone, for example, and that's the big difference. It's a nice screen, and it's kind of the entire front.
Do you know what I think we need? A standard grade and higher grade of something. You know, I just need a standard grade phone just with a good camera and looks good. I don't need all these fancy things.
You sound like Angie Mocheja trying to take away maths.
Basic.
No, I think the one thing that people are really good at is acclimatizing to new technology. We figure it out very quickly. We're able to, you tell someone, download this app. Within a couple of minutes, they've figured out the app.
Mm-hmm.
They've checked it out. They've tested every dimension of it. What apps have you got on your main screen? I'm always interested in this. What stuff do you use regularly?
What stuff do I use regularly? Yeah. Well, you'll be happy to know.
What do you got? You got Cliff Central in there?
Central,
that's nice.
There.
Thank you, dude. I wasn't looking for a plug. What other apps do you use regularly? I see Facebook. I see WhatsApp.
And I've got SnapScan and all my Google apps and all a bunch of social apps, basically.
Okay. Yep. That's pretty much everybody. Anyone got anything different to that on their front page? I've got my bank. Let me see. I got my bank on here. I've got my calendar. I've got my camera. I've got notes.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a very cool app called Flipboard, which is sort of a news thing. that I use.
I found it extremely annoying.
You do? Yeah. You hate Flipboard? I like it just for browsing through articles and things. Voice memos.
That's yes. useful. Do you actually use that?
I do. I use. I do. I record stuff for the show. Waze, I use, rather than the other map apps.
How do you find that?
Very good. The other day, Waze told me there was a car that had stopped. It stopped literally 2 minutes before I saw it stop. And Waze was like, oh, there's a stationary vehicle.
It was updated.
Yeah. I was blown away. The best traffic app.
That's what happens when you open it up to the people, eh?
Yeah, correct. You let people run it instead of a corporation. Well, Ben, what do you got on there?
I've got my drone app. I've got my driver app, as in tells me where the balls go in the golf course. I've got my shot tracer app, so you can actually see the tracer. I've got a lot of golf stuff on here.
Sorry, it was a mistake to ask Ben. Yeah. Yes, Sia, what do you got?
I really do love that you can get to know someone so much based but they're home on screen. Their app. Yeah. I have the Oprah and Deepak Chopra meditation app. Hey, that's good. If you're looking for a 21-day meditation experience, I highly recommend this app. Have Cliff Central, Shazam. Ooh, I have an awesome app called Hot Hands. If you just like,
it's what's a, that?
What? It's
that
just basically weird. Like a game, though.
Oh. Yeah.
So perfect dinner party situation to whip out.
Oh. Then, Hot Hands.
Hot Hands, the F.
Sia sits there at dinner and sits everybody at the dinner table. Hey, guys, what are you up to? Let's play some Hot Hands. Yeah. And they'll go, oh, sure, Sia, that sounds great. I'm going to put my hands under the table, Clara.
Anyway. All right. Yeah, then the usual. The Calcacchio app as well. Oh, yeah. Some all social right. stuff in my bank, yeah.
Mubs, anything interesting on your home screen there?
How to cage up a man in 30 seconds.
I have my phone, which is a good start.
Yeah, she actually has her phone here. Let's give her a round of applause.
Thank you.
Small achievement.
I've also got Waze, Uber, Cliff Central, Shazam, Skype, Bottles.
What are Bottles?
Oh, Bottles.
I'm also an avid user of Bottles.
What is Bottles?
It's Mr. Uber Delivery for your booze.
Nice. All right, Amanda, what you got there? Anything exciting on your side? Let's check in on Amanda, everybody. This is exciting because you never know with Amanda. There might be something new.
Cliff Central.
Yep.
Discovery.
Yep.
Polar Flow for my watch.
What's Polar Flow?
It connects with my Polar watch.
Okay.
And Messenger. And yeah, that's about it.
All right. Okay. What can you tell about people from their apps?
Well, you can immediately tell people that have a lot of social apps on their phones, obviously, are people that are engaging a lot more, especially the younger generation, I've noticed, have
Tennis, are there
every
people,
single social app. I don't,
are
I don't know.
Are there people who don't engage in any of that stuff? Are there people who are just totally disconnected from the world of the internet whose information is not available online?
I don't think there is anymore. A lot of the people that maybe don't subscribe to all of these social networks, you know, they'll still have a phone and they'll make phone calls instead of Skyping perhaps, and they'll send SMSs instead of a WhatsApp. But to that extent, you know, there are people that have decided not to open up their lives to the internet.
Do you think those people are sensible long term? Do you think they'll be the ones that we're jealous of in 10 years time?
At least I don't think so. I don't think there's anything to be afraid of if you use the internet.
You don't think so?
No.
All right, tell me why you say that, because I know people who warn me every other day, oh, you're putting your information out there, someone owns you, you're the product, you're not being charged, you know you're the product, that kind of thing. So help me understand why you're not afraid.
Well, I mean, yes, you are the product on, you know, the big stuff like Facebook and Google and all these kind of things, obviously. But, I mean, you still have, you put the information out there that you actually want to put out there. So, I mean, if you are going to be irresponsible, yes, you might get in trouble with some of the things that get out there. But I don't mind Facebook showing me an ad of something that I might actually be interested in.
Yeah.
Or in my Google mailbox, getting a quote for insurance that, you know, I might have searched on Google the day before. You know, those kind of things aren't invasive in my life. Mm-hmm. In some people's lives, it might very well be. But
you're very practical about this. You realize that there's, you know, a cost to kind of connect, and that cost is that you'll occasionally be served information that might actually be relevant.
Yeah, and I think that cost is very much worth it, to be connected to anybody in the world at the cost of, you know, being spammed a couple of ads every now and again.
Yeah, it's not the worst thing.
Yeah.
Okay, you've talked me down from the perch, because there have been moments where I've thought I need to actually delete myself from everything.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do feel like that, and you guys have spoken about it before, just kind of taking a week or a month or whatever, and just
like a detox,
getting off it completely, and apparently that is good for some people.
Oh, I don't know. It's still slightly unsettling for me. Maybe I might be a bit too backward, but to know that these people have so much information on me, they know now, they can figure out my, you know, shopping trends. They know, they even know what time I sleep, you know, based on some things. I don't know if I really
I guess I'm a little biased because I do work in the industry of analytics and machine learning and these kind of things that are used to serve up these ads. And I kind of understand how they work. And so I'm a little bit biased in that, you know, if you, the information you put out there can be used, just be responsible with the information you put out there.
What do you think the next gadget's going to be? We hear a lot of people talking about these wearables, and whether it's a watch or some kind of fitness app, we hear about them putting clothes together that are smart clothes that are effectively able to communicate with your other devices. What do you think is exciting in that world? Is there stuff you've seen recently that you thought was interesting?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, everything is becoming smart now, quote unquote.
Yeah, right. So, fridge is talking to you. Your car and your watch and your phone are talking to each other. It's almost like you're being left out of the conversation sometimes.
It's even going as far as hair dryers and toothbrushes.
Yeah, what if your hair dryer and toothbrush ganged up on you and tried to kill you in the night?
If they're both in the bathroom when you walk in the middle of the night, but in the night you might have a problem. Like,
they're standing there looking at you. And they've given each other names.
I call you Henry.
All right, so what is a smart hair dryer going to do?
I can show you a couple of pictures. It's a very strange device. It's kind of cylindrical. Mm-hmm. So it's smart in the way that it kind of senses what the temperature is outside, what how much pressure and how much heat it actually needs to push into your hair. I mean, it's obviously massively expensive. Is it needed? Of course not. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's these examples all over the place now.
Like I got a toothbrush the other day that I had to download an app for. Listen
Excuse
to this.
Me?
Yeah. It's this genius toothbrush that they've just brought out, and it's got your cell phone acts as a mirror. It comes with this thing that you attach your phone to, that you stick on the mirror. You have to brush your teeth in front of that. Tells you if you're spending too much time on the one side or the other side.
Oh,
yes, and works out what you need to do more of and what you need to do less of. It's like going to the dentist every time you brush your teeth.
And everybody loves going to the dentist.
That actually
apparently
won't mind, though.
Isn't that
it's
clever?
Telling you, like, maybe you're
brushing too much on the one side or in the front. I'm telling you, they're figuring out stuff we don't even know. And these machines are now, they're helping in a lot of ways. So they're obviously getting in the way for some people, but for other people, they're helping.
Yep. So, I mean, that comes back to the apps I was talking about previously. That's where the innovation is. In terms of the wearables you were talking about, you know, the wearable market hasn't taken off.
You don't think it's a thing yet?
Well, it's a thing. It's, you know, the Apple Watch sells quite a bit. There's a couple of Android Wear watches that do all right, but mostly the fitness wearables seems to be the ones that are catching on the quickest, because they are less expensive most of the time, unless you go for the fully kitted out one with GPS and water resistance and all that kind of stuff. But there hasn't been one device that has captured people's imaginations yet.
All right, so if you want to ask Tennis a question, you can WhatsApp us on 0797482090. And if you want to talk to him, you can get hold of us on Skype too, Cliff Central, one word. What can we start getting rid of? What technology do we not need anymore? Because I've got gadgets that I used to think were essential that are no longer essential.
Well, if we go all the way back to where we were maybe 5 or 10 years ago, everybody had a desktop.
Yeah, desktop computer. Yeah.
I mean, that is probably superfluous now.
You don't need it.
You don't need it unless you are a heavy gamer that needs a PC rig, but I mean, you're all sitting around here with your laptops. That is where the world is going.
Do you think we'll eventually get rid of these too?
I do. I actually do think we'll get rid of them.
So
we've already seen what they're calling hybrid laptops. So they're kind of between a tablet and a laptop.
Okay. It's like a tablet that has a keyboard.
Yeah,
effectively.
But so, for example, Apple hasn't made a proper one yet because theirs is still running iOS, the mobile operating system. Mm-hmm. But somebody like Microsoft has a Surface. They call it the Surface. Mm-hmm. And that is a fully fledged Windows 10 PC. That is basically a tablet, mm-hmm. and it comes with a smart cover, and which has the keyboard in it, and you know that it's starting to move in that direction.
What do you think will ultimately happen to things like the? Will you have to have one device that does everything, or will you have two or three? I mean, at this stage, you say that the desktop is going to go, so you say the laptop is going to go. We can have a tablet and a phone. That's it.
Probably, I think even down the line, you may only have a phone. Hopefully they don't get much bigger than they are now, but you know, there is going to be some accessories, some smart stuff that you kind of dock into.
I used to travel with a laptop and a tablet and a phone. I didn't use any of them. I used the laptop just because it's easier to interface with, but I could have just as easily only had my phone. Mm. Then I would have only had to take one kind of charger.
Yeah.
And you don't need to have all these heavy things to lug around on flights or whenever you go to work every morning. Do people own company technology, or do the companies say to them, buy your own laptop? What's the best way to go?
Well, in the professional environment, usually a laptop is still much more productive. So that's why people still use it in a professional environment. Will we get to a place one day where we don't need laptops?
No, but I mean, who's paying for the laptop? Does the company buy the... If I need Sia to work, do I need to buy him a laptop, or must he come with his own and then we pay him extra to use his own equipment?
Well, it's separate from company to company. But
oh, so you could almost decide it individually.
Yeah.
Because I think that matters to people too. You know, if they have their own device, they'll work more. They'll do more at home. They'll be able to use the same device. They won't have their files stored on two different things.
Well, most people get a get a laptop, for example, at work, but it still belongs to
the company.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Don't need that anymore. Probably not.
I mean, I've used my phone for all kinds of things at work. You know, when I'm out of office, I'm doing conference calls to our office overseas, mm-hmm. for example. It's that simple. You can do all of that stuff.
And the company pays your bill?
Yeah.
No. Now, what about cloud storage? Because people still believe in hard drive storage, and many, many companies do this. They back things up on a server at the office. But actually, these days, it makes no sense at all, because the cheapest kind of storage of all is in the cloud.
Yeah. The world is definitely moving in that direction for personal use, definitely.
Is this why you also don't get machines with huge amounts of memory anymore? You don't need to store so much.
Yeah, I mean, most laptops now come with maybe 1 terabyte at max, but most people are fine with 256 gigs. But yeah, cloud storage, from a personal sense, is very much a thing, and it's happening. And I mean, I've got everything on the cloud, and companies as well, even companies that have to make a lot of API calls between different machines, different servers, and a lot of them are starting to just direct it through the cloud.
You see, for example, I just downloaded the Google Photos app, which links my email accounts,
yes.
all of my email accounts, and my gallery on my phone. So any photo that I automatically take with my phone now gets uploaded onto the shared
cloud.
But I just picture some Google intern who's bored and just scrolling through all of my photos, judging
sexy pics.
Exactly. Like, I'm no Rihanna, but listen, I can, you know. I don't need nobody saying that.
Well, that's the other thing about these massive tech companies, is we put our trust in them.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of that transaction, is do you actually trust them? And as you rightly said, a lot of people maybe don't. Mm. But once that trust breaks down, the whole company will fail.
Yeah. So it's very important for them to keep it up.
Exactly.
Here's something interesting. I think that the iPhone is a perfect design. The operating system is simple, logical design, and transferring your data to your new iPhone takes no effort. Why go through the stress of learning a new designed OS and battling to transfer your data every time you upgrade your phone? Some people like to complicate their lives with too many options. Isn't that an interesting point of view?
Yeah, I mean, that is why a lot of people, you know, you've got people that have had Apples for 10 years and they will always have an Apple device,
mm-hmm.
because it's what they're used to.
They call them disciples.
Yeah, definitely.
But I quite like the idea of trying something different to compare the two.
Yeah,
I used to use an iPhone, but I've had Android for the longest of times now because I just prefer Android.
And why is that?
Well, I mean, for me, it just runs smoother as a system compared to iPhone. But that's just my little opinion. Mm,
yeah,
I'm no tech genius or anything like that. I just have a preference for Android.
I mean, and so that's one of the big drawing cards for people with Apple devices is it's consistent. It'll be easily updatable with the newer software, and you'll always know what you're doing if you've been using an Apple device. And same with the Macs. The Android world is a little bit different. You're right. So there is a lot more to choose from, but essentially it's still the same operating system. There's just a bit of tweaks here and there that the manufacturers actually put onto it.
A lot of the really tech smart people I know, they like to use Android. They say that they find iOS is very limiting to them in terms of what they can achieve with it. They can't personalize it to the degree that maybe someone on Android could.
Yeah, definitely. So that is one of the biggest reasons I don't use Apple devices.
Mm-hmm.
I do like to go in deep into the device, play with all the settings, make the device exactly how I want it to be. Right. And you can even, with Android, you can obviously skin it with different stuff from the App Store. You can root it and put a whole another base operating Android system onto it. So there's a lot more flexibility and customizability on Android. So that's why certain people actually do prefer that over the same every time.
I have a question. There was a time where I lost some of my contacts in my phone book, where the saved contacts were just appearing as the cell phone number. And at the time, I didn't remember having messed with my settings or anything like that. Why would something like that happen, where your contacts
that is so
get
annoying.
Lost?
Isn't that annoying?
Like, what happens then in that situation?
What, was it on your phone's?
It was on my phone,
on your phone's phone book?
Yes.
So not linked to your Google account then? So if you connect to your Google account,
yes,
they upload the contacts to Google, and so you can get any new device, everything will be there. If you saved it on the phone itself, if something goes wrong with the memory, then yes, you can lose it.
Okay.
How irritating. It's little things like that that make everybody's lives better or worse, right? It really does throw you if you get a new phone or something happens to your old phone and suddenly you just don't have that number and that name together. It drives you crazy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in our line of work with the website, you know, we get so many devices coming across our desks every now and again. You'll tell me that, you know, setting up the device when you switch it on for the first time is super annoying and it takes a long time, especially to get it the way you want it. But now they've made it so simple so that you can just if you're linked to your Google account, you can, in one fell swoop, download all of the apps that was on there. You can even get an app that configures your screen in exactly the same way it was on the other phone. So there's a lot of easy kind of ways to get around some of the most annoying parts of
what are the other things that annoy you?
The things that annoy me on Android, for example, is when manufacturers don't update the software. So Google comes
out. How often do we need to update software, though?
As much as possible, in my mind.
To get rid of bugs and to make sure things work
efficiently.
It's bugs,
it's security, it's optimization. Well, if there's a monthly patch, that'd be great. But that obviously doesn't happen. So in the Android world, Google comes out with a new version of their software. They then obviously send it to all of the manufacturers that actually use their software. They then have to tweak it further to make all of the changes as they did with the previous version of Google to put on their phone. Mm-hmm. So that whole cycle takes a hell of a long time if you're not running a Google phone that has stock Android. So that, to me, that is really annoying. I always like to have the latest the latest features and little optimizations on a device.
What do you think is, for most people, an affordable phone? Because we've got, in South Africa, we've got the very big difference between the people who can go straight up to the top and get the best, smartest, the sexiest phone, and then you got people at the bottom end who are still using Nokia 3310s.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, shout out to Nokia 3310 for still being compatible in 2017 and still having a battery, still being able to switch on and off. I mean, that's a major achievement.
Yeah, and the new 3310 actually has a color screen, and it's got all the old good stuff we had on it. And
wow.
I got mine in 2001. That's how old it is.
Really?
2001.
Whoa.
Yeah. To follow up on that question, would you say that smartphones are overpriced?
I think for what they're worth? I think they are priced to what people are willing to pay.
Good answer. Very diplomatic answer.
Well, I think they're going to make it as expensive as they can. While people will still pay for it. So Gareth, on your previous question, so I love the fact that there are so many other manufacturers coming into the market with a much lower price device. So we've seen the biggest trend actually in the last probably 12, 18, 24 months has been that, as one of my favorite tech reviewers always says, good phones are getting cheap and cheap phones are getting good. Yeah. So there's a lot of options now in the mid-tier level that you can get an affordable device that would still work really, really well.
Now, you're also a music fan and a musician.
That's true.
All right. So how's technology helped music?
Well, there's a lot of overlap there now. I mean, and you'll also know there's a lot of optimization in terms of how you can actually produce music.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. I don't want to talk about selling music or being able to market music online. I want to talk about how you make it.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of companies that have come out with extraordinary devices that they use to make music. So little soft pads that actually act as a full orchestra. So you can, with a different fiddling, it's got vibratos, it's got even drums and everything. So there's people playing almost as a full band, full orchestra on a device, not even a meter wide. There's a lot of it's making producing music easier. So if every man off the street, if he's got the money for the equipment, can produce music and then obviously has the means to get it out there on the streaming services.
Yeah, I'd imagine too that this makes it accessible, because if you, for example, wanted to arrange a song with seven instruments in it, before you would have had to buy those seven instruments, find people who could play them, or train yourself to play them. And ultimately, it just gets outrageously expensive and complicated, and everybody has to get into a session and jam together. Can't always do that.
Yeah.
Now you could put it all together on the machine.
So if you just think a couple of years ago, so for example, I love the band called Panic at the Disco. Mm-hmm. And in their latest album, the band actually split up. The lead singer kept the name, and he produced the entire album on his own. He played all of the instruments, and he released
Didn't need those other leeches.
Exactly.
That must suck for the other band members.
Yeah, and you couldn't do that 5 years ago. You couldn't do that 10 years ago. You'd have to painstakingly get someone to play every instrument, do the recording, do the mixing afterwards, and it would take
a
lot longer.
The
quality is as good. Yeah.
Wow. Gone are the days of just using GarageBand then.
Well, you can still use GarageBand. There's nothing wrong with GarageBand.
It's a good app. Yeah. It's just a very big app. I tried to delete it from all my different devices. How many devices are you carrying around? Or how many different things, as a tech blogger and as someone who is fascinated by new technology and gadgets and things, how much stuff do you have?
Well, I try not to hang on to too much stuff. I've probably got about 5 phones lying around.
I've got a drawer at home of cables. It's just cables.
Oh, I hate that.
I've got a drawer with so many different cables, different connectors from this to this, from HDMI to AV to red, green, blue. You know, there's red, green, yellow to.
Yeah.
And now you'll have USB-C and the previous USB and the lightning connectors.
There are ones with square holes and round pegs and round pegs and square holes. Oof. And who knows what to do with all this stuff?
Throw it away.
Isn't it meant to? Are we meant to throw it away?
It's obsolete. You're not going to use it again.
Wireless connecting.
Wireless is going to be one of the main sources, but also the whole world is moving towards USB-C. It seems like we may finally have a universal standard.
No.
Yes, it is.
Now, which one's USB-C?
It's actually on this device. So it is the new version of the
charger for any Android phone, effectively.
The new ones, yes. So the difference is you can
How does that look?
It looks it's a little bit more rounded.
Okay.
So you can put it in any way. You don't have to put it the right way around. But all of the new MacBooks, for example, are also now using USB-C as their charging port. Unfortunately, it only has one, which is very annoying. But it seems like we're moving to a standard, which hasn't happened.
Ben is very into drones. He got a drone the other day, and he's flying it around and mostly not crashing it. But this is obviously something people like to do. It's taking cameras to new places.
That's great.
There are drones that can go underwater. There are drones that can fly high up in the sky. There are drones that can fly through very, very tiny spaces. We're now able to explore the world in different ways that we couldn't before, yeah. Right? You'd have to send a small child into a mine before. Now you can send a drone down there to have a look at things.
I was at a launch of the new Spock, the little small drone.
Yes,
right. That's what Gareth wants to get.
Mm.
And it's absolutely fascinating how quickly
it responds to hand gestures.
Yeah, it's great. So you can kind of flick it away and then call it back, and it's very smart. So at the launch, there was also even a smaller drone, maybe half its size, and they've got a VR goggle mm-hmm. that you put on, and you actually look through the little camera on the device, and that's how you fly it around.
Oh,
it is
my
awesome!
God,
see, I want the goggles. I want to be able to, like, obviously everything starts off with bits and pieces and remotes and stuff, but to have the goggles, which are actually also your sunglasses, which actually then run that would be insane.
They've tried the glasses. It didn't go well.
It's all going to come together one day, Gareth.
It will. I do believe you. While we're talking about these drones, I suppose one of the things that people really want is to be able to get the feeling of flying, and there are drone races
yep.
that happen all over the world. I saw an amazing video the other day of these tiny little drones and these drone races, and they move at unbelievable pace. It reminded me of Star Wars Episode 1 with the pod racing. Except you don't need any of those big engines and things. You just need a couple of volts of battery power and some rotors.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating how quickly drone racing is actually taking off. It's a huge. It's already in the first couple of years, it's blown up and it's worth millions in the races. Just the prizes that people are winning. There was a 15-year-old kid that won the race in July at the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
The race in Dubai, sorry, at the end of last year, and he got $750,000.
Wow!
And he's 15 years old.
What was his name? Luke Anakin,
actually.
Anakin Skywalker. Huh?
That was his name.
Lucky kid.
How fast can some drones go?
Jesus.
No, quick.
They can go fast.
Really quick. It goes easily 100, 120 most of the races.
Really?
But they're pushing it. They're obviously going to push the technology even further very quickly. So, I mean, it's amazing to see those drones flying at those speeds. And they have obstacles, right? So they've got a course.
Yeah, they've got to go through cones and over this and under that and in through the... Yeah, they wind their way through the different obstacles. It's a phenomenal thing. Just look up drone racing. You'll be busy for hours.
Wow.
It's super exciting to watch. It's in some ways more exciting than Formula One, Ben.
Well, it is because the cost is not very high because you don't necessarily lose a human life.
Yes. I don't think that was the cost.
The drones crash into each other and it's fine.
Yeah, well, those drones do get
expensive. Sure, but that's their problem. That's why they get paid $750,000 if they win.
Yeah. And these are the races where they actually fly with a goggle. So it must be a fascinating experience to be running at those speeds.
Is it capped in any way? Like, are you allowed a certain amount of power, or is it pretty much whatever you can make, you can fly?
So what is great about the racing is that there's obviously also different divisions, different sized drones, power. But all of the drones in a race are exactly the same. So it's not that if you have a slightly better rotor.
But there will be divisions eventually where people will modify their own drones, and they'll be able to put extra technology into them, do some research and development. I mean, this is going to be the next level of all kinds of transport.
Well, yes, very true.
Whether it's goods or people or anything else.
It's going to be very interesting once they start making the taxi drones, for example, mm-hmm. that's also taking off in Dubai relatively soon.
But yeah, that was meant to be in July. But I also read recently that there's a drone airport being built in Rwanda for medical supplies only.
Mm-hmm.
So people who live in rural areas, right, and you can't get a car out to some place.
Right.
Either the bridge is washed away or the road's just terrible, or wild animals, actual wild animals. These drones go down and they can take blood or a kidney or whatever it may be.
Medicine. Doesn't have to be blood or
it could be a panado, whatever it is. It's like, but there's an airport, and these drones can just go back and forth.
It's amazing. These are the solutions that Africa's come up with for their problems, and that's why I think that wherever you are in the world, it's now become immaterial what your geography is.
Yeah,
there are ways to get to you that have never been available or accessible before.
And the drones are going to be so versatile in the very near future that obviously on the one side you'll have Amazon delivering your packages with drones, and on the other side you'll be taking a drone taxi. It's going to be, there's going to be every single size, every single thing you can, what would want to do with a drone, you'll be able to do very soon.
Right. I want to just find out if this is true or not. Someone just sent me a picture of something and said, is it a scam or truth? This is Vince. Urgent. The port vulnerability of blah, blah, blah is detected on your device, which makes a high risk of infection of the WannaCry ransomware. The virus will encrypt all of the content in your device and blackmail certain bitcoins to release. Download the specialized antivirus program to protect your device. Do not do that, right?
No, do not.
That sounds like bullshit.
It sounds like somebody sent him a spam email and he opened it up. That is exactly how WannaCry started, which is quite scary.
What's WannaCry?
So WannaCry is a massive hacking that hit the world, about a month and a half ago now. And that's the one that took down the NHS.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're the ones who asked for money.
They
had to pay, right?
Well, actually, it's come out that with WannaCry, nobody actually paid any money and they were able to get everything back up. But in the last couple of weeks, there have been these kind of attacks around the world more than once. And it seems like a lot of these attacks aren't even looking for money, so that they just hold the data ransom. But they don't want money, basically, if you can't unencrypt them. So they're just trying to cause shit, basically.
Unreal. And these guys obviously can make huge amounts of money by asking you to pay so that they can unlock your device.
Yeah. So on personal devices, you know, it's very different than hitting a company. And when they hit the NHS, I mean, they couldn't admit new people into the hospital because their systems were down for about 24 hours. It was a huge, huge problem.
Do we have to be very careful of this stuff? How can we protect ourselves? You said you've got to update your software regularly. That's one of the things I've heard.
Yes, that's very, very important. Updates, whenever you see an update, get onto a Wi-Fi network and update it. Not only your operating system, not only the kind of small increments that the manufacturer is making, but your apps as well. So a lot of the apps have been found to be vulnerable, and they also release updates quite regularly. Yeah. So that is why you'll see all those annoying updates very regularly.
Gotcha. No, I always just thought they were trying to show me some new fancy thing.
Sometimes.
Tennis, how are we doing with Wi-Fi? I mean, is it becoming more and more universal? Are there places that are starting to realize that no matter what they are, restaurants, libraries, businesses, that they should offer free Wi-Fi to people so that people can be more productive in those spaces? I would, for example, rather go to a restaurant that has Wi-Fi, if it's just me having a meal, than go for the ambience of the food or the people or anything else.
A lot of people do think like that. That's why it's become ubiquitous in Europe and States.
Uh-huh.
You can literally go into anywhere, any place and you'll have Wi-Fi.
They give you a Wi-Fi code before they give you the menu.
Yes, that is very true. I mean, it is that important to their business now to have that free Wi-Fi. Obviously, in South Africa, we're not quite there yet. We're getting there, especially in the developed hubs around the country. You should find Wi-Fi almost anywhere, but it's still not nowhere near the accessibility you see overseas, and also the internet speed isn't nowhere near what you get.
How are
there.
We going to get our internet speed up?
It's about infrastructure. It's about investment.
But you see people digging up every road in South Africa to put down fiber.
Well, that is the next step. We need fiber. We need fiber to be universally accessible. For anybody to have at least the option to have 100 megabits per second line is very important. And that's why in South Korea, for example, internet is a human right. It's in their constitution, it's now a human right. And they had that infrastructure boom very, very early on. And that's why, every single person has access to internet there.
Mubs, what kind of connection do you got? You got one of those old telephone lines that goes...
Dial-up.
You mean at home?
Yeah.
I'm a little embarrassed to say.
What? You got a...
Are you on dial-up? We're not such a...
What do you got, Mubs?
I still use a dongle.
Okay. All right.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a dongle if it's the right speed.
You're getting a decent price for it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good price. I'm not consuming 250 gigs of data every month.
The only problem with a dongle is only one device actually has access then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But you want a Wi-Fi one. You can get those.
You can. Yeah, you can.
What should we be paying for data? You think our prices in South Africa are too high? You think they're okay?
It's very high. It's really very high. But I do feel that once these infrastructures are being put into place, are finished,
it'll be very difficult for them to justify charging us those prices, because there'll be people who will be charging us a lot less.
Exactly.
And so, we'll go to them.
And that's the power of being privately funding infrastructure.
Yeah.
Right now you'll pay the same for a 10 megabit per second line than you did maybe even 3-4 years ago for a 1 megabit per second
right.
line.
It's the one thing that's come down in price.
Yeah. So mobile data, it's probably not going to come down anytime soon. I can't see that happening with the networks and the way they work. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in ADSL and through those private networks.
Right. So just use your phone at home and on the Wi-Fi at the office. That's all. Man.
Exactly.
Download shit. Download as many podcasts as you can on your boss's Wi-Fi.
Yeah. That is the way most people go these days.
Right. That's advice from an expert.
Please, don't feel bad about this.
Yeah, no. Mobile data is crazy. It's so prohibitive to the people of South Africa. I think it's criminal, to be honest. It's very bad. People need access to information.
Couldn't agree more. All right, Tienis, listen, I can't believe it. We're out of time. We didn't even get to take any other questions, and there were people who had some. Why does podcast take so long to get uploaded?
Well, that's an internal question.
To get uploaded? Or do you mean downloaded? Because to upload your own stuff is sometimes upload speeds are much, much less than download speeds, depending on what your contract is.
Yes.
So, I mean, here at Cliff Central, we have an upload and download speed that are matched. So that doesn't happen very often. Sometimes they give you a great download speed, but very, very, very bad upload speed.
Yeah.
That might be the answer to your question. and then a few others that we're not going to have time for now, because it's already almost 9 o'clock. Thank you, Tienis. Nice to see you, man.
Thank you very much, guys. Good to
Thanks
see
for coming to visit us. Bandwidth Blog and Tienis Janssen van Rensburg popping by to answer some of our questions around all the tech and the gadgets and the things that we need to know and use around the house and around the office and while we move around the world.
This is CliffCentral.com.